Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers. I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1.
Medications require eligibility and prescription. Patients on 15 milligrams of tirzepatide had an average of 21% weight loss in a 72-week clinical trial when paired with diet and exercise. First month as low as $25 with a 12-month MedPlus plan. Does not include the cost of GLP-1 medications.
New Titans free agent targets are emerging as teams make cuts around the league as players come closer to hitting the market. We're going to talk about three guys, maybe a fourth, that could be emerging as Titans free agency targets. This is the Music City Audible. Let's get to it. Welcome everyone to another episode of the Music City Audible, a Tennessee Titans podcast. I'm your host, Justin Graver, full-time NFL podcast producer for Odyssey. And joining me as always, my co-host, the publisher of NFL Draft on SI and the managing editor of your favorite Titans website, Titan-sized, Justin Mello. Justin, Wednesday arrives. The Titans have yet to make a roster move this week. We thought we'd have so much news to talk about. We do have free agency league-wide news that affects the Titans, but they're dragging their feet on making any moves. How's it going?
I'm doing well. Like you said yesterday, I mean, they've got deadlines on like the Calvin Ridley and L'Jarius Sneed decisions, and they don't have to be made today. You know, they've got another week or so before they decide with what they're doing with those types. But like you said, lots happening around the league. Guy got cut last night who's got significant ties to the Titans organization. I think there's another guy that is gaining momentum to sign with the Titans in free agency. I think we all know who that is, but I didn't even say – I got something to say, actually, about
say
that that I'll say on the show today. And there's another target. Don't you put a number on me. You said four. There's a fifth guy that I might want to talk about. We've got lots of free agency speculation to discuss regarding the Titans.
Yeah, I had a guy in mind that I didn't tell you about, which was my fourth, and it sounds like you have a guy in mind that you didn't tell me about, which could be the same fourth or could be a fifth. How exciting, Justin, we'll uncover as we dig in to this episode. So let's get to it. The franchise tag deadline passed on Tuesday. Only, what, four players franchise tagged, and some guys that people expected to be tagged are going to be hitting the market. We'll get to those guys in a little bit. Let's start with the news that you just mentioned. The Giants last night released linebacker Babe Okereke, who was a team captain last season for their defense, had a ton of tackling machine linebacker who, you know, is one of those guys that's actually decent in coverage. One of those tackling machines who can actually cover a little bit. Now, you look at his PFF grade last season, it's not very good. He is way down in the hundreds when it comes to PFF grade, defense grade for linebackers. The Giants defense last year was not very good. Consistently blowing leads in the fourth quarter, giving up big plays and touchdowns, and their run defense not particularly good, despite having a really tough front four on that defensive line. They just weren't a good defense. So I don't want to extract too much of Babe Okereke's performance from just looking at his PFF grade. I think that he would be an upgrade over Cody Barton as sort of a weak side will linebacker that you can pair with Cedric Gray. I think it's an interesting option for the Titans, but not just because he's a productive linebacker, and we got a report from the Combine last week that the Titans are very interested in a higher-level linebacker. Those aren't the only reasons we're talking Babe Okereke, because this guy has connections out the wazoo to the Titans coaching staff. Do you want to run through them?
Yeah, Will Lomas did a really good job putting an article together for Titan-sized regarding all the connections, so head over there and give it a read today. But Babe Okereke, this is rare. What's he been in the league? 7 years, give or take? 7 years, something like that. And every single year that he's been in the NFL, he has worked with a current Titans coach. That is wild when you consider there are three different coaches that we're about to reference. So Obviously, the last couple of years with the New York Giants, his head coach was Brian Daboll, current Titans offensive coordinator. He's on defense. Daboll's an offensive-minded guy, but Daboll was his head coach, right? And I think it's also important to note that Okereke was a captain for the last 3 years with the Giants under Brian Daboll's leadership. So that's one. Before he got to the Giants, he played for the Colts. His defensive coordinator one of those years was Gus Bradley, current Titans defensive coordinator, who's come to Tennessee to kind of help Robert Saleh oversee this defense, install the scheme and all that. And before Bradley got to Indianapolis, the defensive coordinator there was, you'll remember, Matt Eberflus, who eventually left to take the Bears job, and that's when Bradley replaced him in Indy. Well, when Matt Eberflus was the D coordinator for the Colts with Bobby Okereke as his linebacker, his position coach was Dave Borgonzi, Mike Borgonzi's brother and new Titans linebackers coach. So it's pretty wild that this guy's got connections to three different coaches on the Titans staff. Two of them very notably, the position coach and the D coordinator, and his former head coach, I would argue, is notable as well. It's wild that that covers his entire NFL career. So you mentioned we know the Titans might be in the market for a linebacker. I'm of the opinion that they don't necessarily need to be, but we know how much the position matters to Robert Saleh and matters to his defense. So he might not want to inherit the whole linebacker room as is. He might say, hey, I want to at least handpick one of the guys because the position is so important to what I want to do defensively. So that's me sort of conceding they very well might do something at linebacker. I'm not going to be up in arms about it if they do. I just think with all the needs they have on this rebuilding roster, it's not one of those positions that would take very high priority for me. I think what they have in the room is very reasonable. I think it can get better, but I think in its current state, it's one of those rooms that's like, I've got a pretty good football team. I could get better at linebacker. It's not one of those rooms that's like, oh my God, I've got nothing at edge, cornerback, wide receiver. But let me put some resources into linebacker as well. That's kind of how I view the room right now. And also, I get, it depends on the level of resource, right? If it's Okereke and he's making $6 million a year, there's plenty of room to go around, with how much space Titans have.
You said Okereke. We've had this conversation before we started recording.
It's Okereke. I apologize. Bobby Okereke. If it's $5 or $6 million a year for him, then there's lots to go around.
Well, that's the question. And like, just to push back on what you said there a second ago, like, obviously they have huge needs at edge, wide receiver, cornerback that outweigh any other need on the roster, but it's not a mutually exclusive thing. It's not like spending a draft pick where you spend that pick and that's the pick you made, and then you have to figure out the rest of your picks. Like, they can go negotiate with a bunch of different free agents, and we have a pretty good inkling that they're going to go after John Franklin Myers. So there's a strong starting level defensive lineman that you're going to be positioned potentially to add. Wandale Robinson has been heavily linked to the Titans. We're going to talk about another wide receiver after our first break coming up here that has been linked to the Titans that could help fill that need. There hasn't been any real cornerback Titans connection rumors floated around, so it'll be interesting to see how they go after that position, because I've been saying, I mean, we did our mock offseason almost a month ago now and said they should add two starting level free agent cornerbacks because the room is in such dire need of help. But all that can happen, and they can go sign Bobby Okereke, who, you know, wasn't necessarily poised to hit the market. Maybe it was expected for people who know things in league circles, but as far as we know, like, this wasn't an unexpected cut, because the Giants are in cap hell and he saves them a bunch of money. But it also wasn't like a he's definitely going to be on the market kind of guy. So I wonder if this shook up their plans, if they were expecting this. But the fact that he's played for Gus Bradley and Dave Borgonzi, and obviously Brian Daboll, not as influential as the offensive coordinator, but can at least speak to the character, the locker room, the culture, that kind of thing. He, like you said, team captain in New York. Like, that's the kind of guy that Mike Borgonzi wants to bring in, a guy who already knows how to work for Gus Bradley, how to play for Dave Borgonzi. Like, all these things are extreme positives that can help sort of kickstart the rebuild. And high character, exactly. So
Walter Payton, Man of the Year as well, by the way.
Right, he was their Walter Payton Man of the Year candidate. That's a good point. He'll be 30 in July, so it's not like he's a spring chicken. Titans fans should be super familiar with him, though, because he played his first four seasons with the Indianapolis Colts and was a menace against the Titans many years, you know, sacking Ryan quarterback on linebacker blitzes and et cetera, helping contain Derrick Henry, and also not help because sometimes Derrick Henry went off against his Colts teams. But anyway, neither here nor there. I do think that this is going to be a guy on the Titans radar as a potential signing early in free agency. His last contract with New York was a 4-year, $40 million deal. Now entering his age 30 season, does that come down a little bit? Again, coming off not the best year PFF grade-wise, still highly productive in terms of tackles. I do think you could look in that $6 to $8 million range, get a 2 or 3 year deal done where the last year you could get out of it. If it's a 3 year deal and he plays two and it's, you know, getting towards the end of his rope in that second year, maybe you don't keep him for the third year. But as far as a guy that can come in, help set the culture under Robert Saleh, under Gus Bradley and Brian Daboll on both sides of the ball, and help be a leader in the locker room and a high character guy, I'm all in. Like, what do you have to lose by signing this guy to a not that expensive of a contract when you have $90+ million in cap space? Nothing, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think you're looking at something like 3 years, $24 million, right? Like probably around, I think, $8 million a year. And like you said, you get out of that third year if you need to. It's an interesting dynamic. What would it do to the linebacker room? If so, do they cut Cody Barton? Do Barton and Okereke maybe, you know, I could see a scenario where they split reps a little bit. Like, I don't think either of them truly is like 100% workload kind of guy. So that would be interesting to see what you do there. And then, of course, Cedric Gray would still be your number one in the room. James Williams, your fourth linebacker, special teams ace. He probably wouldn't love that. I'm sure he's hoping to get an opportunity to compete for like that number 2-3 role. That doesn't happen if Okereke comes in and you cut, unless you cut Barton, for example, right? So be interesting to see what that addition would do to the linebacker room.
You know, cutting Barton actually costs you money. It's a dead cap without a cap saving. So you would lose like $2 or $3 million in dead cap space if you cut Cody Barton.
For some reason, I remembered it wrong. I thought they would save like $2-3 million. And I remember saying they shouldn't do it when we talked about it during the mock off season.
I thought they would too, until I've done like countless iterations of the Titans offseason on Stick to the Model, the new app thing that was released a couple of weeks ago. And every time I try to cut Cody Barton there, it's like, this will cost you money. So maybe I should confirm that by looking at his contract.
It makes sense because I think they signed him. It was a 3 year contract they signed him to.
Right.
And you normally can't get out of 3 year deals after 1 year. I always say, I mean, a good rule of thumb, it doesn't apply all the time, but a good rule of thumb is you can get out of a contract when there's 1 year left on it, right? With some sort of cap savings.
I mean, maybe Stick to the Model is wrong, because if I look at his contract in SpoTrack, it says that they would save almost $4 million, $3.7 million.
I thought it was like a $3 million, but it's still a good rule of thumb. Because if you think about it, like, they signed Cody Barton last offseason, not a ton of savings to get out of it. They signed Xavier Woods last offseason, they had savings because that was only a 2 year deal and there was 1 year left on it. Anytime you're cutting a guy with like 2 years left on the contract, usually not, you know, super beneficial.
Yeah, it's about $3.3 million in savings. He has an $8.2 million cap hit and a $4.9 million dead cap charge. So they would save money. I take it back. They would save about $3 million by cut a little over.
Similar to Lloyd Cushenberry, right?
Like not out of the question. Like, I think that if they go sign Bobby Okereke and Quincy Williams, for example, now I don't know, are they going to invest that much in free agent linebackers this offseason? That seems a little extreme for a position, as you said, that's not their most dire need. But just as a random example, if they did that, they could save $3.3 million by cutting Barton. Or if they see, look, remember Titans fans, and you as well, because you were, I'm sure you know this, but you weren't talking like this a second ago, but this is now a three inside linebacker, three off-ball linebacker defense. It's been a two off-ball linebacker defense for years. And again, you know, that's the base formation. There'll be nickel packages, sub packages where you got safeties in there instead
of
linebackers.
They'll be a nickel 80% of the time.
But that doesn't mean necessarily that there aren't three linebackers on the field, because you could take a defensive lineman off the field and put an extra defensive back, or you could take a linebacker off the field and put an extra defensive back. There's going to be multiple deployments of this personnel, and there will be plenty of snaps, especially on early downs, where there are three linebackers, off-ball linebackers on the field. So are those guys Cedric Gray, Cody Barton, James Williams, insert Bobby Okereke, and whose spot does he take? Or insert Quincy Williams or other free agent linebacker if that was the path they go down? Or does James Williams become that like weak side because he played safety once upon a time? Like, is he your coverage weak side linebacker potentially? There would be a lot of, you know, moving the pieces around to figure out how it all works. But I think that At the end of the day, the point of the matter is Babe Okereke is an upgrade on what they currently have in that room. He's not going to come close to breaking the bank as far as free agency goes for this team with the cap situation they're in. And he's a high character culture leader that the Titans could use to help kickstart the rebuild and implement the new culture that Robert Saleh and his coordinators will be implementing. So if they go down this road, I'm all for it. It's not going to be outcome changing in the massive grand scheme of things for this Titans team, but it's an upgrade at a position that they could use an upgrade at. So why not is my final point. Why not?
We're going to go to break and hit the next one. I will add by saying, and we're going to break, so I'm not giving you a chance to rebuttal. I'm all
Jeremiah
for it.
Love. Oh, sorry.
I'm all for, there, of course. It was coming. I'm all for it, but I think it would be misrepresenting by saying that he would be like a huge upgrade on Cody Barton. I think it's actually pretty close to like a sideways move than it is a huge upgrade. I think it's probably a slight upgrade, but I don't think he's like a game changer compared to Cody Barton. Right. Let's go to break and hit the next target.
All right, welcome back. Time to talk about another free agent target that is emerging for the Titans, and this based on a Paul Kaharsky report that came out the other day earlier this week.
Really,
the
good
Titans are targeting a starting level veteran center on the free agent market. I don't think this is a shock. Easton Fries had an article out this morning talking about how he heard this, you know, coming out of the combine. One of his takeaways, Titans related takeaways, is that people thought and he heard the Titans would be going after a starting level, higher level, not just like a not replacement level or average level, but like an actual good starting level center on the free agent market. Paul Kaharsky reported a similar thing with names to watch in an article earlier this week. And the interesting part of this is that the top two guys here, 2 weeks ago, nobody thought those guys are hitting the market. Even last week, it was like, wait a sec, are these guys going to hit the market? And this week, it's like, hold on, these guys are close to hitting the market. The first one I want to talk about, let's get this one out of the way because I still don't think it's a realistic target, so let's just cover it quickly, is former Ravens center, well, so I guess current Ravens center until Wednesday, Tyler Linderbaum, who is widely regarded as one of the best centers in football, top five PFF grade overall, like all the metrics, he's a really good center. And the Ravens, I mean, Eric DaCosta said at a press conference at the Combine that they have a market-setting offer out to Linderbaum. And, I was thinking about this, and I think I said this during Combine Week, Justin, was like, if you're Tyler Linderbaum, you can go back, play for a world-class organization with a multi-time MVP quarterback and a new head coach that everyone's excited about. Why wouldn't you take that opportunity? But then it's like, okay, you have a market-setting offer on the table, and you didn't sign it. Why? Well, because you want to test free agency? Because money talks and playing for a world-class organization with an MVP quarterback, it maybe isn't the most important thing to you, and maybe you want to see if you can get a little more market setting than the market setting offer you already have?
I don't remember who said it. I wish I did, but it was one of the mainstream NFL guys, and I was surprised to hear them say it. I'm not going to guess who it was, but it was either an NFL Network guy or an ESPN guy, and it was a video clip said he's got a historically difficult agent whose way to negotiate is to not respond. And I went to go find out who the agent is, and I can confirm that that's the dude who does not respond. Like I think I've tried to make contact with him over the years, and I've never had success myself. The fact that he's not even responding to the Ravens actually makes me feel a bit better that I couldn't get a response when I tried to interview a couple of his clients for my draft series. Listen, he might respond Monday and be like, we'll take it. Like that's like right. It could work that way. And the Ravens will still say yes. You know what I mean? Like the guy could just be biding his time, and it just, that's the way some people choose to do business. So we'll see what happens there. I want to leave the conversation on him relatively short.
Me too.
He's the best center in free agency for sure. I don't think the Titans absolutely, have to go get him. I like some of the alternatives we're about to discuss, but if they do want to make the biggest possible splash at the position, then they'll try to go get Tyler Linderbaum. The reputation, I think, is well-earned and well-deserved. He is one of the best centers in the NFL. He's certainly the best center in free agency. It doesn't mean he might be the best bang for buck center available or the best value signing they could make at the position, but he is probably the best player. Not probably, he is the best center available. So if that's what they want to do, then they should try to go do it.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting to look at this market setting offer. You know, the currently highest paid center in the NFL is $18 million a year. That's Creed Humphrey in Kansas City. And the offensive line franchise tag is like $25.7 million. So is the offer to me is between those two, because the Ravens didn't want to use the franchise tag because it's crazy to pay that for a center, because it also like includes the offensive tackle salaries who are higher paid position. So this whole system is a little broken. The franchise tag itself is just like a very manipulative. And
same thing with 50-year option. They price that based on offensive linemen as a whole.
Right. So they didn't put the franchise tag on Linderbaum, and therefore he's going to hit the market, assuming they don't work out a deal by, you know, Wednesday or Monday. I guess Monday is because he could start talking to other teams by Monday, but doesn't actually become a free agent till Wednesday, technically speaking. Anyway, the point is, what does that contract look like? 21, 22, 23 million?
20 to 22 is my guess.
It's probably under 25, but it's definitely higher than 18. Would the Titans be willing to pay that kind of number for what it's worth? Spotrac has his calculated market value at $17.7 million annually, which we know is low. I don't know where they got that number. That's lower than the highest paid center in football, Creed Humphrey. So
it
not
feels
sure.
Low.
Yeah. And the, you know, the leapfrog theory, even if Linderbaum wasn't the best center in football, his contract as a top guy is going to leapfrog the current highest paid guy. So the other options, though, because, you know, the center market's been all screwed up this week. The Washington Commanders cut Tyler Biadasz, who was their starting center. The Bears had starting center Drew Dahlman, who played every offensive snap for them last season, retire at age 27. So now they're in the market for a center. And in fact, Biadasz has already visited Chicago because he was cut. So he is a free agent now. So perhaps Chicago has their answer there. Chicago also been linked to Tyler Linderbaum in conversations. Anyway, a lot of teams need a center because there are a lot of guys on the market. And some of those guys on the market have been connected to the Titans. So PK reported that Linderbaum was a target of the Titans. I think they're going to get outbid there and let him go somewhere else and say, we're not going to pay that much, even though we have cap space. The next guy that I'm really interested in and sort of is the guy I'm hoping they sign is Bills center Connor McGovern, not Jets Connor McGovern. There's two Connor McGoverns in the NFL. Talking about the younger one who played for the Bills most recently.
One of them should have played a different position. Shouldn't have been.
I know. It's very strange and honestly confusing. But as long as we're talking about the right guy, we'll be fine. Connor McGovern with the Bills said on, was it yesterday afternoon or this morning? Recently said, I have had no contact with the Bills and Brandon Bean, which makes me think that they don't want me back. So another guy who like foregone conclusion a month ago was like, why wouldn't the Bills bring this guy back? He's one of the best centers. He's a top 10 center in the NFL. I would say he's not like a top three center, but he's a good, solid center, smart guy who can be Cam Ward's, you know, point out protections, lead the offensive line group in that role. I think that he is the ideal level of signing. It's like he's not the top of the market guy, but he's a good player who's going to command a good contract, but not 23, 22 million a year like Linderbaum, and has been a good starting center for the Bills, who doesn't appear to be returning to Buffalo. So and he was listed as the second guy in this PK piece as guys the Titans are looking to go after. So, Connor McGovern, welcome to Tennessee. Sorry, go ahead.
When you're a good football team and you've got a quarterback, you're paying $1 billion and you've got to make tough decisions. So I'm not shocked or confused by this at all. And I could also get to a place where if I was that team and I had a super mobile quarterback who can extend the pocket and is really smart, and I got to make tough decisions and kind of crunch numbers, maybe the center is where I sacrifice $15, $16 million per year. So I'm not shocked that the Bills might not be bringing him back, but it is a great opportunity for the Titans. And I agree with you that I think he probably should be their ideal target at center. Because it's not going to be 20. It's still going to be expensive. It still might be $13 million a year, $14. I would guess between 12 to 15 if I was a betting man on where he comes in. But I like Connor McGovern. I think you're spot on. Probably a top 10-ish center in the NFL. It'd be an upgrade on what Lloyd Cushenberry gave the Titans, most likely, over these past 2 years. You don't know till you know, and we learned that the hard way with Lloyd Cushenberry. But I think they'd probably get better out of Connor McGovern, and I'm with you. I think he probably should be the guy.
Is Lloyd Cushenberry the new Andy Levitra? Like, can we stop using
wasn't
the...
wasn't that bad. It was more money to Andy... Levitra. Andy, whatever you just said. I forgot how to pronounce his last name. I don't think it was as bad. And he also has a devastating injury. He could kind of lean on as an excuse. The other dude just came here and flat out sucked.
Yeah, fair. Bad scheme fit. Anyway, if you look at PFF grades, which again, this is like quick way to give you a context snapshot that has to come with a big grain of salt. But PFF grade for Connor McGovern, he was the 10th highest offensive graded center in the NFL last year. For reference, Tyler Linderbaum was 5th highest, so it's not quite as highly graded.
He's a big, much bigger than Linderbaum.
Yeah, I mean, if you follow Mike Herndon on Twitter, he's been tweeting about these two guys, and they are very different players. Linderbaum is a smaller, very athletic for his size, but still not a monster of a man. Guy who excels as a run blocker, and not as good, not bad, but not quite as good in pass protection. Whereas McGovern, his bigger strength is pass protection, which, like, look, I get it. Run blocking is important and having a run game is important, but you draft a quarterback number one overall last year. You want to build an offense around him, prioritize pass protection so that he can excel. I'm not saying that run blocking is not also important, especially if you're going to spend a number four pick on a running back, which the Titans have already done. We just haven't lived it yet. You know, if you know. So I'm of the opinion that they should prioritize the guy who's a better pass blocker than the guy who's a better run blocker. And if you look at their PFF grades, which again, not the end all be all, but Linderbaum is like elite run blocker, average pass blocker. McGovern's like good run blocker, good pass blocker. He's like Linderbaum's high is higher than McGovern's high, but his low is lower than McGovern's low. Like, look, McGovern's sort of more steady across, whereas Linderbaum, there's a pretty big difference between his run blocking grade and his pass blocking grade.
I see it a little differently. I understand that that's important too, but when I think of the body type, that's what I'm choosing to analyze here. I just get the vibe that Brian Daboll, Carmen Brasillo are going to prefer the bigger guys. I'm working on a small sample size here, but, you know, Evan Neal, yes, it was a mistake, but they drafted a mammoth man at right tackle. Andrew Thomas, I think, was a bit of a cross between the two. He was big, but he was also athletic. But they converted Jermaine Illuminor from tackle to guard, or the other way around.
No, tackle to guard. He went back to tackle. I think he played. Yes. Might have played both in New York.
Yes, but he's a big dude as well. They drafted John Michael Schmitz, a big center as well. So, and when I think of that, you know, Earnhardt Perkins system, I tend to think when it comes to running the football, I tend to think a little bit like, you know, downhill gap power concepts more so than zone concepts. And that tends to favor the bigger bodied guys at center than it does the, you know, undersized athletic movers.
Right. You don't necessarily need that athletic out in space pulling guy because of the blocking scheme is different. So I think that Connor McGovern would be a home run signing at center. There is one other guy that PK mentioned that would be a disaster. I mean, I'm not gonna sugarcoat it. It'd be a disaster. Before we move on, Connor McGovern projected market value on Spotrac, $16.3 million. So really right under what they're projecting Linderbaum with the 17 point whatever. But I do think it's possible he gets a little more than this because there are a lot of teams that need a center. The reason that it could be right around this or maybe even a little less is that there are a lot of available centers. It's like a supply and demand. Even though there's a high demand, there's also a high supply. So we'll see how it all shakes out. But I do think something in that 16 to 18, I don't think he passes Creed Humphrey to become the highest paid center in football. Yeah. But right up, like, that's the ceiling, I think, of the deal, and it could be right up to that point. And I'd pay that if I was the Titans. I think that you need this player. You need to solidify the offensive line. Make those investments there so that you're totally set up and ready to bring a running back in at number four overall and actually get the most out of him. The last guy is Luke Fortner, who is a below-average player. He started a lot of games, but he's not particularly good, and I don't want the Titans to sign him. And that's all I'm going to say. Like, PK reported that maybe if they strike out on McGovern and Linderbaum and anyone else on their list, then they have like Luke Fortner as a fallback plan. And if that was the case, I wouldn't even give him the starting job. I'd say compete with Jackson Slater. And I don't know if Corey Levin comes back, maybe, maybe not. Compete with other guys. You don't just hand Luke Fortner the starting job because, again, below average player. Started a lot of games, but below average player.
Yeah, I'd be disappointed if that was the move at center. I think they got to do better, aim higher. I was surprised to see his name included in the story. I remember when he was coming out of Kentucky, I think. Like, he was drafted 4 years ago. I remember, well, top 100 pick, I think.
65 overall.
Wow, that was early. And Jacksonville, they ended up moving on from him at some point. I remember that they brought in another center at some point, I think. Did they not?
They did. And last season, he signed a one-year, $1.5 million contract with the Saints, and now he hits the market again. PK said he was expecting around a $6 million average annual value for Fortner, which feels really high for a guy who's coming off a $1.5 million contract.
Well, he played 700 snaps at center and rehabilitated his reputation a little bit. That's why, right? Like, he did get better this past year in New Orleans. They only credit him with allowing 11 pressures, PFF, 3 sacks. He only whistled for 3 penalties. Like, he did have a pretty good bounce back year. So I'm not surprised at all that there's, you know, room here for him to kind of get a starting job again and increase his value. I just think they should probably aim a little higher.
Yeah, I agree. If you look at his like career PFF overall offense grades, it's like orange, red, orange for his first 3 seasons in Jacksonville. And then like sort of yellow, green, 66.5 for the past season in New Orleans. So
that's,
yes, he did have
though,
his...
Because there's more to it though than meets the eye, to be honest with you. Because it does insinuate that he got a change of scenery, different scheme, different, you know, yada, yada, and played a lot better and rehabilitated his reputation a little bit. Former top 65 pick, that's really high for a center. So he, you know, he is coming off a bounce back year. It is interesting.
Yeah, it would be interesting. I mean, you would hope Carmen Brasil would get his hands on him and do work with him, but I just hope they aim higher. Like, let's not settle for that. Let's go get Connor McGovern. And if you have to pay another $1 million a year for him, so be it. Who cares? All right, that's the center position where we expect the Titans will be making a big time
trade. Sorry.
What just happened?
Trent McDuffie to the Rams for pick number 29.
That was an extremely obvious trade that I saw people speculating about yesterday, and now it has happened, and it doesn't really affect the Titans, but it's interesting. So Chiefs have 2 first-round picks now, number 9 and number 29.
Yes, correct, and the Rams
and the
are
Rams
back out.
Still have number, 13. What, 13? 13, wow. Okay, interesting. They did say, I mean, literally Les Snead said, we want to trade these picks and we want an all-pro defensive back. And they did exactly that. Okay, good for them. All right, Justin, we're going to take a break. But concluding here with the Titans are going to sign a center, probably a big name, big dollar center, just like they did 2 years ago when they signed Lloyd Cushenberry. Hopefully it works out differently this time. We have a few other a handful of players. We actually have 3 more players we're going to talk about after this break.
But yeah, now at this point, kind of earned the right to explore free agency, see what's out there, and just, you know, make a decision that's best for my career and for my family.
All right, welcome back. As we said at the top of the show, the franchise tag deadline passed on Tuesday, and 4 guys were tagged, 3 franchise tags, 1 transition tag applied to Daniel Jones. Now, we had this conversation at length yesterday, so we're not going to spend as much time on it. But the update here is that Alec Pierce, the Colts had 2 impending free agents that they had high priorities on retaining, Daniel Jones and Alec Pierce. The Colts transition tag Daniel Jones is going to cost them $37 million against the cap until they work out an extension for a longer term deal that gives them some cap relief. But as of March 11th, when every team has to be cap compliant inside that top 53 salary cap number of 301 point whatever million dollars, Daniel Jones will be on the Colts books for $37 million. They cannot get out of that until they sign him to a long-term deal. Now, at the same time, the Colts didn't have that much cap space to begin with. So they are right up against the cap now, which means they don't have the money to sign Alec Pierce to a long-term deal without making some other moves. One of those moves could be cutting wide receiver Michael Pittman and prioritizing the younger, faster guy. Or Alec Pierce tests free agency and they wait. And if he comes back, he comes back. And if he doesn't, they let him walk because they prioritized Daniel Jones, a quarterback who has had 8 good games in his an eight good game stretch in his career and then tore his Achilles. So that's what the Colts decided to do. We're not here to judge Chris Ballard. We can laugh at them because we're Titans fans. But in the meantime, we're going to talk about Alec Pierce, who rap sheet, Ian Rappaport went on NFL Network yesterday and said, players never get this close to free agency without at least testing the market. So that's what I expect Alec Pierce to do here. Basically, I said yesterday, Justin, Why are we making it seem like Alec Pierce is suddenly going to hit free agency, like the Colts and him still have 5 days to work out some kind of deal? However, Rap Sheet is saying he thinks Alec Pierce will want to find out, what really is my market value? Can I get more somewhere else? Do I want to leave Indianapolis? Maybe he does. And the rumor out there is that he could get offers of in the $27 to $28 million a year range, which is like top 12 to 15 wide receiver money, depending where it lands. He's not a top 12 to 15 wide receiver in the NFL, but that's how free agency works, and that's how contracts work. And again, the leapfrog theory. So he's going to get paid a lot. Now, I take some issue with, I've seen comments out there that are like, people are paying Alec Pierce like a wide receiver one. He's not a wide receiver one. Like, I think we need to have a mental reset on what being paid like a wide receiver one is, because $27 million a year is just a hair under what T. Higgins is making. And we all recognize T. Higgins is one of the top wide receiver twos in the NFL. Wide receiver ones now are making $40 million a year. That's a pretty big difference from $27 million. So let's just adjust in our brain what $27 million a year for a receiver actually is, and understand that Alec Pierce could be one of the premier wide receiver twos because he excels as a deep threat, which the Titans need desperately on this football team.
I think it's pretty wild, and this is a huge compliment to him. It almost sounds impossible to, and this is why he's going to get the bag and get it. Someone's going to have to pay the Dan Moore tax, right? You've just got to pay more because it's free agency. I think it's wild that this guy had over 1,000 yards last year and averaged 21.3 yards per catch. Like, guys who average 21.3 yards per catch usually catch 15 balls. The fact that this guy was a 1,000-yard receiver and still, and by the way, the year prior, 825 receiving yards on 30, like still, you know, high volume-ish guy and averaged 22.3. Like back-to-back years of almost 1,000 yards and 21 or 22 yards per catch. He is one of the premier deep threats in the NFL. And no, I'm not shocked at all that someone's going to pay him $25 million a year.
To add a little more context to what you're saying, Theo Weiss Jr., yes. Miami Dolphins receiver, led the NFL in yards per catch. 23.2. He had 10 targets.
Yeah, say what he got. Yeah, I mean, that's normally what it is when you average that many yards per catch.
Pierce was second in the NFL. And if you like do qualified receivers or whatever, he would come in at first. Number three was actually Calvin Ridley, 17.8 yards per catch. Of course, he only played seven games and only had 17 catches in those seven games. So, first of all, fit wise, Cam Ward to Alec Pierce, give it to me. And then you continue down the list, Christian Watson, 17.5 yards per catch, 611 yards. The next guy, this is the only guy even in the same conversation as Alec Pierce in terms of deep threat and productive, is Jameson Williams, who averaged over 4 yards fewer per catch than Alec Pierce, did have 1,117 yards overall. But then you get into different territory receiver, Nico Collins, George Pickens, Terry McLaurin, who are in the 15-yard per catch range, which is a vastly different world from 21.3 yards per catch. So yes, that was just to add additional context to what you're saying. But yeah, there's a reason this guy's going to get paid what he's going to get paid. And I think the underrated skill that he brings to the table being a deep threat for him isn't just like being fast and making the catch. It is an innate ability to track the ball down the field. And I've talked about this with wide receiver prospects a number of times, but a wide receiver who can actually track the ball well down the field makes your quarterback look more accurate on downfield throws because they run under the ball. And I think this gets often overlooked when we grade or judge quarterback accuracy. Like the quarterback's just throwing the ball to a spot down the field, right? Like they're not actually judging the path of the receiver and the speed that they're running so that they can lay it perfectly over the shoulder. No, it's on the receiver to find the ball and get underneath it. And Alec Pierce does that at the most elite level. So if the Titans have to pay him $28 million a year to get him to come to Nashville, do it.
Yeah, I'm like, I think it's a lot of money.
It is.
But I get it. Like, I think, you know, he's a playmaker. He's a difference maker. He flips the football field. Cam Ward's got to hit the deep ball a little bit better before they're an ideal match made in heaven.
Well, that's my hope. That's my point is that Cam Ward can throw a deep ball if he has a receiver who knows how to get underneath the deep
ball. But I don't think all of Cam Ward's misses were on receivers last year is what I'm saying. Some of it was on Cam Ward, right?
So I agree.
there's got to be some improvement from him too. If this were to happen and it were to work out as ideally as we'd like it to, that's all I'm trying to say. But I'm not going to have complaints. This team needs good football players. They've got lots of cap space. I think it's a lot. There's, you know, maybe to the Tyler Linderbaum thing, there's probably better value at the position to be had out there. But if they want to make a splash and this guy actually hits the market, he's the one who's going to command the most money for a reason.
And he's only 25 years old, right? And he turns 26 in 2 months. So
that's a lot younger. I remember him coming out of Cincinnati, man. I had a great conversation with him. And we talked about him being a deep threat guy. Like, I'm super happy for him. His first year or two didn't go all that well. Like, this was a gradual growth thing for him.
He had issues with drops. He had issues with drops early in his career. Last thing before we move on to these last two guys and end the episode, Justin, is would you rather have Alec Pierce at 27 a year or Wandale Robinson at 17 a year?
Damn it. I have a really hard time answering that because I kind of feel the same way about both players. I think I would. Go ahead.
I would rather have Alec Pierce at $27 million a year. We haven't talked too much about him over the last few weeks because we just assumed he was never going to get to the market. And so I said on our Wandale Robinson episode that Wandale Robinson would be my top free agent target for the Titans amongst any position. And I still feel that way unless Alec Pierce is involved, in which case Alec Pierce goes to the top of the line because his skill set as a true deep threat who can track the ball and catch it is harder to find than a shifty, undersized slot receiver. Like, I get it. Wandale Robinson knows Brian Daboll and will be a good culture guy and help teach the offense to everybody else and et cetera, et cetera. But Alec Pierce's skill set is harder to find, and that's why he's going to get paid $10 million more per year.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, he's definitely top of the market wide receiver. Be interesting to see if the Colts get something done. It's starting to look like they won't, but I wouldn't say that's a foregone conclusion by any stretch. He really likes playing there. He likes Daniel Jones. He might feel good about the fact that they did what they had to do to keep Daniel Jones. So TBD, but it's starting to feel like it might become a realistic possibility. Quick notes on edge rushers before we end today's episode. I don't have a lot to say about John Franklin Myers because we've talked about him a lot. Everyone expects the Titans to sign him. I feel like they're probably going to sign him. Nothing is done until it's done. 31 other teams will have an opportunity to make John Franklin Myers an offer on Monday, and maybe one comes in at a price point that Mike Borgonzi is not comfortable with. We don't know. TBD. I will say that I had a trusted, someone who I consider a trusted media source, hop in my DMs the other day and say, all the chatter at the combine between people who matter was Franklin Myers is going to Tennessee.
Yeah.
And, that's not a shock, but it's just an interesting thing that happened to me last night, kind of, I don't say out of nowhere, but somewhat out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And as trusted media source, someone who I trust very, very much. And we're all expecting it to happen.
Yeah. I mean, that's not new news. It's cool that you got further confirmation. All it does is add fuel to this fire that is pretty much raging at this moment in time. I'll throw out another guy that I think is an interesting player for the Titans to consider. And I consider him a new emerging free agent target because of the tag deadline. Now, look, the Chargers traded for Odafe Owe midway through last season. Most of the time when a team trades for a guy midway through the season, they make an effort to sign that guy to a long-term contract because they just gave up draft capital for a half-year rental? Well, Odafe Owe did not get tagged by the Chargers. Reports are that he is looking for a contract or expected to get a contract in the range of $25 million per year, which, when you look at the edge market, like, that's not that expensive anymore for an edge. I mean, that doesn't put him in the top five, top 10 even, I don't think, at the edge rusher position for contracts there. So look, if he hits the market, I think he's a player who's gotten better every year, came into the league a little bit raw, but really helped add juice to that Chargers pass rush last season after they lost players to injury. And I'm not saying that I think the Titans should like spend $25 million a year on three different players, but if they don't land Alec Pierce and they don't go really hard after Tyler Linderbaum and they really want to shore up the edge position and not have to use that number four pick on a guy, so they can draft Jeremiah Love instead, maybe Odafe Owe enters the conversation. I think he's probably a bit outside like the price point of edge rusher that they want to sign, but I don't know that by any, I have no evidence for that. It's just kind of what I think Mike Borgonzi would want to do. Do you think they'd go that high after go after a player like Owe?
It's hard to say what they're going to do at edge after trading for Jermaine Johnson, because I feel like Maybe the plan is just to draft an edge rusher at 4 and not do anything significant in free agency, but I could also be talked into a scenario where they do something still, you know, semi-significant in free agency, like a Kwity Paye, who I've talked about quite a bit due to his connection to Gus Bradley, and he fits that bigger-bodied mold they might be looking for opposite Johnson. I really like Odafe Owe. I think he's a really good pass rusher. I like that you brought him up because I similar to Alec Pierce, I've kind of been operating under the assumption that he was definitely going to be back in LA. I mean, when you trade for a guy midseason the way that they did and they needed pass rush help, they still need pass rush help, especially if they let him go. So it makes sense to keep him. If he does hit the market, I think he'll have suitors. And I won't be disappointed if the Titans go get him. He's a really good football player.
And he, just to bring that home, the $25 million a year is like top 12-ish. Contract for depending on where he actually signs, which is like totally reasonable for a young ascending player hitting free agency. You're not paying him like Aiden Hutchinson, but you don't need to. And I don't know, it's $20 million a year less than Aiden Hutchinson for what it's worth. Like, that's crazy.
Fully agreed. Last guy I'll mention before we get out of here, it'll be real quick. Jonathan Grenard, pass rusher I've always really liked with the Minnesota Vikings. Was hurt last year, didn't have the sack production you expect of him, but did have like 47 pressures still. And in the 2 years prior, back-to-back 12 sack seasons, really good football player, can stop the run, set the edge, in my opinion. I really like him. Reports out there, the Vikings might trade him because they're in cap hell. Maybe they trade him, maybe they cut him, I don't know. But a good football player I would have interest in if the Titans are interested in doing something else at edge.
Yeah, I think he's an interesting case because he's on a reasonable contract right now. He's in the midst of a 4-year, $76 million contract that pays him $19 million per year. He's about to enter the third year of that deal. But the report that was attached to this trade, the Vikings are open to trading him, was that he wants a new contract, that he wants to be paid a little bit better than
that. That's interesting, coming off a year where you only had 3 sacks and were hurt.
It is interesting. He is a 28-year-old. He'll be 29 in May, so it's not like he's a spring chicken, but he's also not, you know, edge rushers can play into their 30s and be effective at that role. We saw Cameron Wake come to Tennessee as, what, a 40-year-old almost. All right, that's it. These are new targets that we hadn't really talked about much. Obviously, we had touched on Pierce. Obviously, we knew about John Franklin Myers, but the rest of this list are guys that we weren't sure would be available, and it looks like I'm not saying they all will be, but the chances that they actually hit the market are getting more and more likely every single day that passes without them signing a deal with their current team. So I definitely think the Titans are going to be in on the Connor McGovern sweepstakes, whether or not they land him. I think they're going to be in on the Alec Pierce sweepstakes based on the reporting we heard out of Indy, whether or not they land him. And the other guys, we'll have to wait and see what happens. Bobby Okereke just feels like such a perfect match. So free agency, one day closer. Still no Titans news. Maybe tomorrow we'll have something to react to. What do you think?
We'll see. We're getting down to the nitty-gritty. Monday, legal tampering window open, so Titans will, you would think they'll be making some decisions before then. We'll be back tomorrow to talk about those decisions or talk about more hypotheticals that are going to happen in free agency next week. Until tomorrow, y'all stay safe out there and tighten up.
A Broadway Sports Media production.